Good morning, church family. I am super excited to be up here this morning to present the gospel to you. And over the last couple of weeks in the Advent season, we've been in Matthew, beginning of the book of Matthew. We've looked at what preceded Jesus being born, and we looked at Jesus being born and the implications that had on Joseph and Mary. And this morning, I get to continue on in the story and go to Matthew chapter 2. And we look at the story of the wise men. But before we really dive in there, I have an observation that I've made just from looking at myself and the people around me and just the world in general. I've just realized that we are not a very patient group of people. I noticed this somewhat last night when we're waiting for the new year to come. And the ball drops in New York, and we go, Happy New Year, and we go to bed at 11 o'clock at night because we don't want to wait for the new year to come. And recently in my life, I realized how impatient I was. This is my first Christmas season that I've ever been in a relationship with somebody, and we were exchanging gifts for the first time. And some of you have heard this story, but Casey up there, she's right there in the middle, but I want to call her out. But she thought of a very thoughtful gift. She thought long and hard because I'm not an easy person to buy for. And I figured out what she was going to get me through a series of questions. She was asking me what kind of guitar I have. And then she went down to her aunt who works with leather and was asking me while she was down there what my favorite Bible verse was. So I figured out she was making me a custom guitar strap, which is on my acoustic right now, and it's absolutely amazing, but I figured it out. My problem with that was one evening I got impatient and walked up to her and said, I think I know what you're getting me. And that was my mistake. I have realized that was my mistake because I have been shunned by society because of it. Lesson learned. But I realized my impatience, I wanted to know exactly what that gift was like. And because of that, I jumped the gun on that when I should have apparently waited. So this morning, as we're looking at the wise men, and we're also going to look at just the nation of Israel as we go into this. And the key point this morning is just we're going to look at the posture of expecting. We're going to look at the posture of expecting, and we're going to do that by reading Matthew chapter 2. We're going to start in verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judah, during the time of King Herod, magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east, and we have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. And he called together all the people's chief priests, the teachers of the law, and he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem of Judah," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people, Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so that I may too go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. Coming into the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. So this morning, as we're looking at the posture of expecting, we can notice things from the wise men. And the first thing that we notice is they were waiting. They were waiting for this opportunity to come and worship Jesus. Magi is also, wise men, magi are very interchangeable, and the magi were very important in Eastern culture. And we notice this by definitely by reading the book of Daniel. In Daniel, there were several stories in which the magi were a part of. The first is the king at the time of Babylon at the time wanted to have his dream interpreted. The people, the Magi could not do this. They were unable to interpret this dream, and because of it, the king grew furious and wanted to kill all the Magi and all the wise men in Babylon because they could not interpret his dream. And then Daniel stepped up and with the help of God interpreted the king's dream and saved all the Magi's life. And because of this, the Magi admired the God of Daniel. Daniel was then thrown in the lion's den, and the Magi watched as Daniel was thrown in the lion's den. And they watched as God closed the mouths of the lions, and Daniel came out of the lion's den alive. And once again, the Magi admired the God of Daniel. Daniel's friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were thrown in a fiery furnace. And they came out unburned and alive. And once again, they admired the God of Daniel. So when Daniel prophesied in the chapter 9 of the book of Daniel about the time that the Messiah would be born, the Magi took notice, and they were waiting for the opportunity. They waited for the star to appear in the east, or the west is what this was. Obviously, they came from the east. So in the west, the star appeared, and they headed towards Israel so that they could see the God of Daniel themselves. They were waiting for that opportunity. Unlike Israel, who was not waiting, they were actually dreading the coming Messiah. And we take a look at that in the rest of chapter 2, and you see how King Herod, who was a very wicked king, there was a quote by the Roman Empire, Roman Emperor, who appointed Herod over the Jews. He said, I would rather be one of Herod's pigs than one of Herod's children, because Herod killed several of his children, daughters and sons, and even one of his wives. Before his death, he rounded up several people within Jerusalem and had them killed the moment he died so that there would be mourning in Israel when he died. He was a very wicked king, and we see that in how he impacts really the early life of Jesus in verse 13. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up and took his child and his mother during the night and left to Egypt, where they stayed until the death of Herod. So fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old or under, in accordance to the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted because they are no more." After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up and take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who are trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Achillas was reigning in Judah in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophet, "He will be called a Nazarene." So we see just the wickedness of Herod and what the evilness of that man caused in the early life of Jesus. He had to flee Israel. Israel was not waiting for the Messiah. They were dreading it. In verse 3, Herod was very disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. So it was not just Herod who was freaked out by this Messiah. It was all of Jerusalem, because he was going to throw off their way of life. So this morning, we can learn from the Magi that they were waiting. The second thing we can learn from them is they had joy. They had joy. They were about to see the king. You think about it, they've heard for decades and centuries about the God of Daniel, and they finally are coming to see the God of Daniel. and they were about to see this king, and because of that, they had joy. And every day, we get to experience that king in our own lives. If you're a believer, you have Christ in your life, and you get to experience him daily. But we let circumstances of life get in our way and affect our joy with Christ. In this moment, the Magi were not going to let circumstances get in their way, for they were about to experience the king. Paul is one of my favorites, because this man, all throughout the books he was writing, was in and out of prison. If he wasn't in prison, he was about to go to prison, because that's the kind of life he led. But in the midst of all this, one of my favorite verses, Philippians 1:21, "For me to live is Christ and to die is gain." Man, he wrote that in prison. He was so excited to be in the presence of God. I mean, he was like, man, if I live, I get to serve him. And I'm excited to do that. And if I die, man, I get to be in the presence of the Lord. And guess what? That's awesome to me. I would be more joyful to be in his presence, but I am very humbled to serve him. So in the presence of God, we get to have joy. And for us as believers, we get to have that joy all the time because he is in us and he is with us through everything. So the Magi had great joy as they were meeting the Messiah. And the last thing we can learn from them is they worshiped. They worshiped. In verse 10 was when they had joy. Verse 11, "On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him." We learned several things about how they worshiped him. First is they did not doubt God's plan. We do this so often as we doubt what God's doing in our life. Think about it. These wise men travel hundreds of miles to see this king, only for the star to rest above a house that was not a palace. They walk in and they see a 2-year-old and a poor mother. This does not look like a king. Jesus did not look like a king at this particular point. He was just a baby with a poor mother, and they looked at that and they didn't sit there and go, "Huh, I don't think God's got this going on today. Like, he must have missed the mark on this one. The star must be meaning somewhere else." But no, they did not doubt God's plan. Instead, they worshiped. They offered their best gifts. They offered the gold, the frankincense, and the myrrh, which were gifts fit for a king. When I think of offering your best, I go to a movie called Facing the Giants. Facing the Giants is an amazing movie with bad acting. True story. But this is a movie about a football coach who decided, man, I'm going to live my life and coach these boys to be men of God. And he coached them in a way that was completely different than he'd done before. And there was a scene in the movie that was so dramatic. And every time I see it on my Facebook feed, I like have to stop and watch it, and I get the goosebumps. Because the coach is sitting there talking to the team about the team they're about to play. And the team leader, whose name is Brock, just goes, "Yeah, we've lost this game." He had already given up about this, the next game. He's like, "We're going to lose." And the coach is like, "Are you sure about that?" And he's like, "Yeah, we're not that good, even if we give our best." And the coach is like, "Can you give me your very best right now?" And he had him do a bear crawl. He got on his feet and hands and carried another kid on his back, and the coach is like, "I want you to give me your absolute best." And the kid's like, "Okay, what, you want 20 yards? He goes, "No, I want your best, whatever that is." And the coach blindfolded Brock and said, "Start going." And the scene unfolds. The kid is bear crawling across this football field, and he gets to a certain point, and then the dramatic music starts playing, and the rest of the team starts noticing that something special is going on. And the coach is sitting there encouraging Brock along the way, and it gets to a certain point where the coach is down on his hands and knees, crawling side by side with this young man, encouraging him, yelling, "Keep going, keep going, keep going. Give me your very best. Give me your very best. 10 more steps, 5 more steps, and finally the kid just collapses in the end zone. He had gone the entire length of the football field in this bear crawl. And the kid is sitting there laying there. He doesn't know how far he's gone, but he's sitting there yelling, "I've done my best. This is all I've got. I've got no more." And the coach takes off the blindfold and goes, "Look up. You were in the end zone. Don't tell me you were giving me your very best, because look what your very best got you." And just like that, in our own lives, sometimes we say we're giving God our very best. But if we were giving God our very best, I guarantee you he could do immeasurably more than we could ever think he could do in our lives. So the wise men offered their very best gifts, and we can learn from that. And the last thing is they recognized Jesus as king. They got down on their knees and they worshiped Jesus. They got down on their knees and worshiped Jesus. We got to ask ourselves, do we give Jesus the recognition and the worship that he deserves in our lives? So often I have to ask myself that question and answer honestly. And it's not always the right answer I'm giving. But we have to constantly ask ourselves, are we giving Jesus the recognition and the worship he deserves in our own life? Our takeaway this morning is we can either be like the wise men or we can be like Israel. The wise men were waiting for Jesus. They had joy when they got to see Jesus and experience Jesus, and they worshiped Jesus. On the other hand, Israel, the whole nation, was not prepared for Jesus. In fact, they were disturbed at finding out that the Messiah was coming. He was going to throw off their entire way of life. From the political side down to the religious side, they were afraid of what was going to happen if they let Jesus into their lives. Are you afraid of what Jesus would do in your life if you let him take control? Are we going to patiently follow God's plan? Or are we going to go after our own plan? Because I guarantee you, one plan will be amazing. And we'll sit there and look back and go, "Oh my gosh, look at what God has done in my life." And at the other plan, we're going to be falling apart. We're going to look up one day and go, "How did I get here?" So this morning, as we move into a time of invitation, you have several choices this morning. On day one of 2017, you can make a radical decision in your life. What better day to start something new in your life than 2017, the first day of it? First, and you can place your faith in Jesus Christ. If you haven't placed your faith in Jesus Christ, then you are missing out on the greatest relationship you can ever have. So this morning, you can place your faith in Jesus Christ by admitting to yourself that your way, your own plan, leads to sin, and you fall short of the glory of God. And from that, you can admit that you believe in Jesus Christ and confess that he is now Lord of your life, and I promise you that you will not regret that decision. Second thing this morning is you can make friendship your church home. Man, we have a ton of fun here at Friendship, and we love serving Jesus and worshiping Jesus together. I love this church. It is an amazing church. And this morning, if you are looking for a church home and you've been visiting for a while, I hope that you make Friendship your church home. Imagine the best way to start out a year going is, "I found my church home." And the third is you can just use this altar this morning. Just worship Jesus. Maybe it's been a while since you've just truly worshiped Jesus and talked with God. This morning you have an opportunity to come before the altar and just talk with God and pray. what better way to start out 2017 than an experience with Jesus this morning? So I'm going to pray this morning as we go into our time of invitation. Can you stand with me this morning? Dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you. We just thank you for the opportunity to open up your word so that we can learn more about who you are and apply it to our own lives, God. I pray for each and every single person in this room, God, that you would lead them to a closer relationship with you. If they don't have a relationship with you, God, I pray that you break their hearts so that they see that they need you and that they would come to you this morning. If someone needs to make this church their church home, God, I pray that you lead them to do that and give them the courage to do that this morning. I pray that we just be a people that worship you, that have joy in your presence. God, we just love you and we thank you. In your name I pray. Amen.